fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Well, we have good news, bad news for Darren Erman and Kyle Odegaard right off the top here on Cardinals Underground. Yours truly, Paulie Pencilneck, don't kill the messenger. That would be the hashtag for the following gentlemen. Good news, the terminology here on Cardinals Underground stays the same. So there won't be any new playbook that becomes mandatory that you have to cram and learn on your weekends here in the offseason.
That's very nice to hear.
The bad news is, Darren and Kyle, any equity you think you might have built up over the last 5 years here on Cardinals Underground is straight out that window and out on the brand new practice field. It's a clean slate for everyone, you guys included. So don't come in here thinking that, you're owed anything whatsoever. It's on a prove-it basis, effective immediately here on Cardinals Underground.
I thought the bad news was going to be a personnel change, so I'm feeling pretty good about the equity thing. As long as we're still here, grinding away, trying to prove ourselves, I feel okay.
It's sort of understood, though, Kyle. It's the NFL. It's understood.
I was going to say that Cardinals Underground has gone through so many versions over the past decade or so since we started this thing that
it's true.
You know,
we're always on the chopping block.
You'd be well served to remember the history here on Cardinals Underground. That's all we have to say.
I do remember it. I do believe I've been on almost all of them.
Oh, that's good. That's, you know, he's forging himself a 15-year career himself over here. That seems to be the ceiling, by the way. 15 years, Carson Palmer.
Then check it out.
You can only hope Larry Fitzgerald will be back for the 15th year. We'll see about that. Maybe something a little bit later on Larry Fitzgerald. Or right now, Darren seems eager. He just moved up in his seat. Do you have news?
No news. I'm starting to wonder how many of these off-season Cardinals Underground podcasts we can have where we actually talk about Larry Fitzgerald and whether he's going to come back or not.
Well, you know what? Because it can always get worse, it will, because I did talk to someone earlier today who thinks that Larry's going to wait until they find a quarterback. And I said, no. That can't be till mid-March at the earliest. You're telling me another month plus at least?
That wouldn't surprise me, though, because here's why I would say that. And I've thought this, and I've talked to Kyle about this, not on the air before, but maybe we mentioned on the podcast, I thought all along that, again, playing a position in which, in fact, I know I've talked about this, playing a position that isn't super crucial in terms of himself. I mean, they're going to have to find wide receivers. So whether he plays or not, they've got to still look for wide receivers. It's not like finding the quarterback. So to me, he has lots of room to wait till March or even April. I mean, even if you want to wait through the draft, I could see that. It wouldn't be ideal. But I don't think the Cardinals would say, if he said on May 1st, you know what, now that I've seen the draft and I've seen what you do, I do want to play. I don't think they're going to say no. So
he did say I'm going to make my decision shortly after they choose the coach. He said that a few weeks ago on, I think, one of the golf channels, one of the interviews when he was at one of those golf tournaments golfing, and he got wrangled into an interview, which I'm sure he didn't want to do. But he did say he was going to make his decision shortly after the coach. So we'll see what happens. I'd be surprised if it lasted that long. And I think if you look at it from his perspective, maybe the one situation where you wouldn't want to do it is if it's more of like a dual threat guy. We talked to Mike McCoy this week about what his philosophy is at quarterback, and he's open to any type of quarterback. He's worked with a lot of different guys, and maybe if it's more of a running guy, then Fitz doesn't think he's going to get the targets. But other than that, I think young or old, he's going to be the main focus passing the ball. They're going to look to Larry Fitzgerald. So I think no matter who the quarterback is, I think it makes sense for him to come back.
I did enjoy the one Golf Channel interview where the reporter called him a world-class photographer. I thought that was solid right there. Larry's really made a lot of strides in that area, apparently. I wasn't keeping up on my Larry Fitzgerald photography update desk.
If you follow his father on Twitter, you've seen his picture, Larry Jr.'s picture of the lion many times.
By the way, speaking of Mike McCoy and listening to him talk, he did mention that he had a conversation with Larry Fitzgerald and at one point said that Larry's excited. So it certainly made it sound like Larry Fitzgerald will be back. We don't know that for sure. We do know that Mike McCoy is indeed the Cardinals offensive coordinator. They did the meet and greet and brought him out in front of the media and the former head coach. Well, he's been here and done that, and he said the first task is the following.
You know, we have a lot of work ahead of us moving forward. Our roster, we got a lot of time before we play that first game. So when the offseason program, the players come in, we're going to have our core. We're going to find out what our players do best. The roster is going to continuously change. We're going to churn the roster, and it's going to keep on going. So the key thing, I think, as a coach and as the offensive coordinator is find out what our players do best, and we'll adjust accordingly.
A lot of unknowns right now, if you're the coaches, anyone on the staff, because the roster could go any number of different ways. Obviously, the most important position, quarterback, but just general takeaways on the Mike McCoy press conference, Darren.
I would say that, you know, hiring Mike McCoy makes a lot of sense, obviously. And, you know, since we last talked, you know, we weren't sure exactly who the coordinators were going to be. We've talked about, you know, having somebody with head coaching experience on staff and how important that was going to be. And you know, what I found interesting I asked the question was I had asked McCoy, you know, are you a different offensive coordinator now after being a head coach than were you beforehand? And he said yes. And it's because now he understands what the head coach is going through and the kind of mindset and prism that the head coach has to view everything compared to just if you're the offensive coordinator. And, you know, the examples he's using is, okay, you know, you choose to run or pass on this third down. And what happens if it doesn't, if you're the head coach, you're thinking, what happens if it doesn't work? And then what, you know, what's the blowback? If you go for it on fourth down, what's the blowback? And as Mike McCoy said, as a coordinator, you're thinking everything that we draw up in your head is a first down or a touchdown, because that's the whole reason we're using it, is because we think it's going to be successful. Obviously, it isn't always. And it's the head coach ultimately in a lot of ways that has to absorb the negative side of that when it doesn't work. And he says he kind of sees things a little bit differently now calling the plays. Now, that's not going to necessarily change how he calls plays, but you know, this is a guy who's done a lot. He's overseen, especially a quarterback, he's overseen a lot of different types of quarterbacks. I know there are definitely some people that are cautious about the hiring. When I talk about fans, you know, they say, well, what happened in San Diego? It wasn't a whole, you know, a really exciting offense. Or what happened in Denver last year? You know, I can't speak to that because, to be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of that. I only kind of know it tangentially. But I will say that I think ultimately I think the hire makes a lot of sense. And McCoy sounded very confident. And I do think he's going to work well with Steve Wilks.
As we all surmised here on Cardinals Underground, his head coaching experience was definitely viewed as an asset and a key selling point in recruiting him and hiring him. And Steve Wilks mentioned it a number of times. And he cited that constant communication that Mike McCoy, you know, stresses between him and the head coach, and between series, he'll go to him, well, what do you think if we're near the goal line or we're third and short? Are you thinking run, pass? And it was apparent, I think, to everyone that Steve Wilks valued that.
Yeah, it seems to me like there's definitely this feeling that you get from them is that this theme of flexibility, and whether it's, like you said, running or passing, or when we talk to them about personnel and like if you like a certain type of quarterback, and he said he wants one that's going to win for them. So it's something where you look at it and Mike McCoy has an idea of what he wants to do, but we're at a point right now where the personnel is so in flux that I don't think they're willing to be as rigid as maybe Bruce Arians was, where he liked a pocket passer and he wanted tight ends who could block first and then were receivers. And he wanted all these things in his offense that were pretty rigid, and maybe Mike McCoy is more fluid. That might just be because he doesn't know who he's going to have yet, and maybe behind the scenes he's going to push for a certain type of quarterback, but we don't know at this point if he prefers one or another. And it's interesting to see if that's going to kind of remain how it is moving forward.
In fact, to your point about flexibility, Mike McCoy was asked about putting the playbook together.
We'll talk about a staff. We'll put the book together for the offseason program, and as the players get here, if they've got some suggestions, I'll be open, but I also will make the final say on how we're going to call things, and that's my job. It's the same thing with the coaching staff. We're going to have all these ideas we're putting together, but then we got to cut back and say, this is going to be our install schedule. And then as we go through the offseason program, we're going to teach the system.
You know, I was surprised at one point he said even the terminology that he would be flexible in that regard, that he would use some different terminology. It was easier for some of the players, citing Larry, for example. He's used to some of the terminology that BA used. I guess Wiz and unused, and because he's worked twice with Wiz, there might be some parallels there.
To me, that makes all the sense in the world. I'm
surprised he was receptive to that. So many times these guys are so into their own
I agree
playbook.
With you, but you know, at one point I remember hearing somebody talk about that and say, basically, what makes more sense? The coach coming in new and trying to change how he says stuff for all the players that already know it one other way, or trying to get all these players to learn how you do that? That sure. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Seems logical. I just haven't heard much of it where a coach is really willing to do that.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, and again, when we start talking about the flexibility and all this stuff, and I do, it sounds genuine to me in large part because you better be flexible in terms of what personnel you may or may not be able to get. But I will say that until we see it all, I mean, I feel like going back a couple of coaches, I feel like Ken Wisenhunt was very like, I want to put my players in the position where they do best. And when he started having some struggles in terms of finding a quarterback, there were times when I felt like that was a situation where Ken Wisenhunt and the offensive staff here might have played to the strengths of the quarterbacks and maybe the lack of talent that they had a little bit better, and instead they kept trying to use the same kind of stuff. I think it's, again, easy to say now. You got to see what happens when we actually get on the field.
And the question I asked was about the learning curve, because I remember the beginning of BA's tenure and what a lot of players consider a pretty complicated and complex playbook. And, you know, they struggled through the first 7-8 weeks of the season, and there are a lot of receivers making a lot of errors that made Carson Palmer look bad at the time. But speaking of quarterback, what is the plan? Here's the head coach, Steve Wilks.
There's a question mark right now. We all know it's the elephant in the room. All right. We don't have a quarterback. Steve and I have addressed that issue. We sat down with Michael as well already. We're going to have a very active and aggressive plan through free agency, and we'll see exactly what's going to happen within the draft.
That was from his introductory press conference, Steve Wilks. And then you look at Mike McCoy and you realize he's worked with Kyle Orton and, you know, Tim Tebow, Peyton Manning, Jake Delhomme, Phillip Rivers, and then the young quarterbacks last year in Denver.
Yeah, he's definitely spanned the spectrum of different type of quarterbacks, and that, I mean, that's probably a good thing if they're truly open to it. And obviously, when you're starting off and they're the type of regime that it seems like you don't want to give away anything, where Bruce Arians was obviously very honest and always seemed to know exactly what he was thinking. But if you're looking for quarterbacks going into the draft, going into free agency, and if you can not show your cards a little bit so other teams don't have an idea of what you want to do, it's probably the better play. So maybe they do want a certain style, but knowing that he has worked with a Tebow and done things like that, then that probably opens the door to a Lamar Jackson or somebody that has a better running ability. So it's interesting to see who they want to bring in here, if they do have this philosophy, which 4 or 5 years down the road, if they keep bringing in the same quarterback, we'll have an idea. But to me right now, it seems like they're definitely open to a lot of different ideas.
Well, this elephant in the room, otherwise known as the challenge of finding a quarterback, and Mike McCoy was asked about that.
We understand the importance of the quarterback position, but we'll always look at what's in the best interest of the organization with every decision we make. But it's a great challenge, and I'm excited for it. You know, come in here and figure out who that quarterback's going to be and, you know, build the system around those players that we have here.
Now, maybe Steve Keim is up in his office right this minute, and he knows that someone the likes of a Carson Palmer is going to be available come the new league year. Maybe, but I tend to believe that they don't know yet.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. I don't think – I mean, you might – the Cardinals might be able to sit up in their offices and say, this is – in our perfect world or our wish list, this is what we're looking for. But you don't, once you get all the other moving parts involved, whether it's in a trade or in the draft and where you're picking and other teams picking, I mean, I don't, there's no way you can know for absolutely for sure. And there's other parts that are involved in this when I talk about moving parts. And I'm talking beyond just the teams. I mean, we're talking about, you know, deadlines, kind of spur action kind of thing. You know, if you're a team that's looking to trade a quarterback at some point, but you don't have to, you know, you can wait people out. You can wait till the draft. I mean, there's all kinds of things that impact how all this goes over the next couple months, which is, you know, briefly getting back to the Larry Fitzgerald thing. I mean, you're like, you were mentioning, you know, that might not be till March when they find out the quarterback. It might be later than that.
Right.
Now, they'll probably have a quarterback or even two by then. A very good possibility that you got to make sure you have somebody in case the musical chairs stop and you weren't able to get the other guys that you want. But, I mean, in terms of knowing for sure who your starter is going to be, in terms of Larry Fitzgerald, for instance, knowing who's going to be throwing him passes when training camp opens with the first unit, that could be a while.
So if you're shopping for a quarterback, the question becomes, to your point there, Kyle, and will they really show their hand? What sort of quarterback are they shopping for? Are they in the jarred goods aisle? Are they over in the produce aisle? Here's the offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy.
One that's going to win a lot of games. You want a guy who's going to be a leader, a guy who's tough. You sit back in that pocket, you're going to get knocked around a little bit. You got to get back up. You're going to throw an interception, but can you bounce back? So it's all about winning. So we want to get a guy who's going to win a lot of games for us and a leader, most importantly, because they're all different shapes and sizes. That doesn't matter to me.
Well, that answers the question. It's Drew Stanton then. I'm marking down Drew Stanton right now with his 9-4 record as Cardinals starter.
That's
a done deal. So here on Cardinals Underground, we answered the QB question. I mean, he's talking. It could be. Under that set of criteria, could be, checks a lot of those boxes. We honestly don't know. That's my point. You have no,
right.
Could be Sam Bradford, could be Case Keenum. That's the intrigue of the offseason.
John Skelton's out there.
Oh, ran into John Skelton the other day. He's in a 66 Mustang. I saw the Mustang first and Skelton second.
It shows where your priorities are.
Don't tell him that.
And like you're saying, with the with identifying the guys you want but not knowing exactly who's going to be available, I think – they're looking right now and they're saying, hey, we would like these guys as the Cardinals starting quarterback next year. And then you have to figure out the value of it, where if you're looking to trade or you're looking to sign in free agency or you're looking in the draft, and can you get that guy in the draft? How much are you going to have to pay in free agency? I think I definitely agree with you where there's a lot of moving parts. And is there a guy that you love so much that you're willing to give up a little bit more than maybe you want to? Or does it make sense where, if the market blows up for the top quarterbacks, does it make sense to take a guy that's on that second rung and then you have a quarterback, but you can also look in the draft and be aggressive in the draft? And I think I definitely agree. I think they're open. I think they're willing to be flexible with a guy like McCoy, who seems like he's done it with a variety of guys. You can kind of make it work together instead of needing one particular kind of quarterback.
All right. So then, look, the Cardinals' offensive identity is totally up in the air right now, just based on the quarterback in a large part. And then on defense, everyone's wondering, all right, what is it going to mean? Here comes Steve Wilks with his defensive background, and he brings the linebackers coach and his close associate for the last 5 years with Carolina over, and Al Holcomb, and he meets the media. And, you know, one of those questions he got repeatedly was on, you know, what sort of scheme is he going to run, the 4-3 or the 3-4? And, well, you know, multiple apparently is the answer. Here's Holcomb.
We're going to try to create negative plays. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to do things based on what we need to do to win the game. And if it's by pressuring, we'll pressure. If it's by playing front and coverage, we'll play front and coverage. Again, you know, it's just going to come down to who the opponent is, what the offensive scheme is, and then how we want to attack it based on game plan.
And once again, he mentioned the sub packages, and so often you're a nickel and dime, and that's where it gets really multiple. And so it sounds like it could be a little bit of everything this season on the defensive side of the ball.
Just like on offense, we heard it sounded like it could be a little bit of everything on the offensive side of the ball. And frankly, at this point, it feels like both coordinators on offense and defense are being fairly vague, in part probably because they don't know a whole lot about the personnel, whether guys there's uncertainty like the quarterback, or just because they haven't had a whole lot of chance to study them. And you know, we also got a new group here. So there's a chance that that's going to be kind of par for the course, is where, you know, we may not get a whole lot of really direct answers as we go because they choose to play it a little closer to the vest. But I mean, clearly defensively, Al Holcomb's got a lot of pieces to work with. And I'm not going to sit here. I mean, he was, you don't want to do everything exactly the same. It doesn't work that way. And Steve Wilks isn't going to want to do it exactly the same. He's got a very distinct way, I'm sure, how he wants to run his defense. But at the same time, you don't want to mess up a good thing. And their defense has been pretty solid. And when you've got all the stuff that you've got to figure out on offense, you know, I think you try and keep your place at the starting line as best you can, and not try and move any further back by messing with things too much.
Al Holcomb did say that probably the biggest challenge for the players will be the terminology, just learning the new terminology. And then Steve Wilks did say that Al Holcomb will probably get a little more autonomy than the other two coordinators, just because he knows Al Holcomb. Al Holcomb knows his defense. They've worked together 5 years. He's going to spend a little more time with the offense and the special teams. And you know, those are two areas he hasn't had a lot of experience with, is being a defensive-minded head coach.
Yeah, and that's interesting because obviously Steve Wilks coming in here, people, you know, at least me, I figured maybe he'll just call the plays and he'll do his thing on defense, much like Bruce Arians did on offense, calling all the plays. But obviously he wants to be the head man and delegate those responsibilities to his coordinators. And he definitely has a lot of trust in Al Holcomb. And like you said, he can kind of help out everybody, but maybe be there for the critical decisions. But when you're talking about play-by-play, it's more let the coordinators do their thing because they have a feel for what they want to do, and they're kind of in the flow of the game as it goes.
It'll be interesting to see how all that plays out, and just looking back. I mean, obviously Steve Wilks has made it clear that his coordinators are going to call the plays. You go back to Bruce Arians, we all know that he made it clear from the day he walked in, before he even announced that Harold Goodwin was going to be his offensive coordinator, that he was going to call plays the whole time, and that was never going to change. Ken Wisenhunt called plays when he walked in as an offensive guy, but he gave that up after his first year to let Todd Haley call plays. Then he kind of brought it back to himself a little bit when Mike Miller took over, and then kind of gave it back to Mike Miller. So there was kind of ebb and flow. I'll be honest, I'm not really sure what happened when Denny was the coach, and quite frankly, I'm not 100% sure they, as a coaching staff, knew exactly what was going on.
Remember, Keith Rowan lost his job the morning after the Monday night meltdown, and
yeah,
there was some dispute as to whether he was instructed at halftime to take the air out of the ball.
And that's exactly, I mean, those are the kind of things. I'm not exactly sure where all that was going, but right. I mean, clearly, head coaches, you know, it takes something to say, I'm definitely not going to call the plays. Now, that is always every head coach has final say, and I'm sure Steve Wilks, and I think he actually mentioned it at some point. But I mean, if there's a play being called, and I feel strong, and get on the headset, I feel strongly about going for it here, or running the ball here, or whatever, or blitzing here, I'm sure that'll happen.
Yeah. Will it happen where Patrick Peterson gets moved around? I mean, do you think there's a change in job description for P twice, based on what we've heard so far? And it sounds like, and you know better than anyone, Kyle, because I think you had this conversation with him in the preseason, that all of a sudden Patrick Peterson is willing to change up his duties?
Yeah, I mean, he's made some comments recently where he might look into it more, where in the preseason he was very intent on shadowing the number one receiver. He felt like that was his job, and he appreciated the prestige that came with it. And I think when we're talking about an Odell Beckham or DeAndre Hopkins, I think a Doug Baldwin qualifies it. When the other team has a bona fide number one, I would be surprised if he wasn't still shadowing that guy. But when you start talking about teams that have a 1A and a 1B, guys that are above average, but neither of them is a star, maybe sometimes you lose a little bit if Patrick is just on one guy and the offense knows before even breaking the huddle where he's going to be. So I think it would help maybe if you mixed it up, and who knows how that's going to come about. He's got to have the conversation with the coaches and see what Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb want to do, but it is something where if you want to give him more chances to intercept the ball, and when he does, he's so fast and electric that he can often return that for a touchdown or do something big. So it wouldn't shock me if they try to figure out a way to maybe get him more involved. When he does his job well against number ones, that's extremely valuable anyways. So I can understand the idea of, hey, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Let's keep him there. Let's just do it. But also from the aspect of he's not getting any interceptions anymore because people do not throw at him very much. I understand that side of it too. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of evolves in the offseason.
All right, so with all that in mind, Roy Green took it a step further and sort of elaborated. A guy who played on both sides of the ball, his name obviously in the Cardinals' ring of honor, Roy Green, the former receiving great. He started out as a DB, and here's what he was saying on the Red Sea Report.
What a lot of teams will do is sometimes they would put their number one corner on the second receiver, then you double the first receiver. when you can mix it up and he looks over there and says, oh, Patrick's over here. Uh-huh. Let me go to this guy. No, oh, wait a minute. He's doubled. Now he gets hits in the ear. Maybe a fumble, you know, change of possession, whatever it may be. So I like the fact that they're going to move Patrick around.
So, for example, in the Cowboys game, he shadowed Dez Bryant the entire game. Dez Bryant didn't get a single target when Patrick Peterson was targeting him. But in Roy's theory there, every once in a while, all of a sudden Dak Prescott looks, oh, Pete Twice isn't on Dez Bryant, but he's going to get doubled. Maybe safety help over the top. Someone can take a chance, a risk, and then maybe that's where he can end up with a turnover. I like it. A little change of pace.
It makes sense to me. You know, again, there's a couple things. One, I noticed Kyle was saying he's thinking about moving. Steve Wilks made very clear that Steve Wilks is going to be the final say on what these things happen. I appreciate where Patrick's coming from, but he won't get final say on exactly how they're going to use him, although they will take his input. The other thing, too, is I hear that, and that makes a lot of sense. But if I'm hesitant to throw at the number one receiver when Patrick Peterson's on him, I'm certainly going to be more hesitant throwing to the number two receiver Patrick Peterson is throwing at him. And again, I feel like where this is coming from Patrick, as he's talking about getting a chance to have the ball thrown at him more so he can get more turnovers, and I'm not 100% sure that's going to be the end result. The team may benefit by changing it up a little bit. I'm not sure Patrick is going to get the trickle-down economics he's expecting to find out.
And I do agree with you. If a quarterback's going through his progressions and his reads, and he goes, oh, I'm going to my number one. Oh, he's doubled. Now I'm going to go to my number two. Well, there's Patrick Peterson. Doesn't mean he's going to pull the trigger.
I mean, Fitz in his heyday, how many times did they complete a ball to him in double coverage?
Sure.
Probably because, in part because the two guys that were covering him weren't Patrick Peterson. I still think I'm going to trust Odell Beckham even in double coverage more than maybe my number two guy against Patrick Peterson in a lot of times.
Well, and what's interesting too is a lot of the mock drafts have the Cardinals going after Josh Jackson, the Iowa corner at number 15, presuming they can't get a quarterback that they might go cornerback.
He's done with the Suns.
We don't need your basketball.
Oh,
your
sorry.
Affinity for basketball over there. Actually, at this rate, he might be better off trying football.
Whoa, whoa.
Maybe we should go to Al Holcomb and have him talk about his theories and philosophies on defense.
We have, as Coach Wilks likes to refer to as our DNA, and, you know, playing with violence and effort, playing smart, taking the ball away and finishing. But also, we have core values as well. It starts with us. It starts with focusing on us and trying to get better each and every meeting, each and every day.
I mean, for example, I could take Josh Jackson, the Iowa cornerback, and he'd probably go 0 for 13 in an NBA game, too. I'm just saying.
Fair point.
As for the Cardinals defense.
I bet you I could go 0 for 13 in an NBA game.
I know you try. Darren's a gunner now. Just a FYI, little Darren will gun it. You pass the ball to Darren, you ain't getting it back. I mean, that's Stephon Marbury all over again.
I believe it.
Yeah. Anyway, what other takeaway? Wait a minute. We didn't even talk about the special teams coach, maybe the most important hire based on. Did you notice when Jeff Rogers mentioned that some teams will completely ignore special teams if they're so dominant on offense and defense?
First of all, I did notice he said that, but he didn't say special teams. What did he say? He said fourth down.
Fourth down, you're right.
That was very interesting.
That was interesting. But then he went on to say that some teams miss the playoffs even though they're top-notch in offense and defense. And show of hands, who immediately thought of the 2015 Cardinals?
Right.
16 Cardinals, 16. I'm sorry.
15
edit that
actually
out.
Worked out
2016
well.
Cardinals, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a great point. And he's right. And it'll be interesting to see how the special teams unit comes along. I did think it was interesting Steve Wilks mentioned how important special teams were to him and how he won't shy away from using everybody on it. But let's face it, the Cardinals did too. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, they were playing on some coverage units, you know, for the previous regime. And obviously it worked sometimes and other times it did not. And that's definitely something they need to figure out.
And you look in the division and how well the Rams have always done on special teams and the Seahawks, Tyler Lockett has burned the Cardinals a lot of times on returns. And a lot of times these games are close and you never talk about special teams very much in the offseason because you're so focused on the personnel on offense and defense. And then one big return or a fumble or a block kick or a made field goal can change the complexion of a game. And it's something that Steve Keim definitely addressed last year in free agency when he went after Phil Dawson, feeling like that was an upgrade. And then they were willing to pay Andy Lee to come in here. And they both did pretty well down the stretch. So It's something I think the Cardinals are definitely more in tuned, especially like you said, after 2016, so many issues. And if that can become a much better unit, you know, that really raises the ceiling overall. Quarterback's the big thing, but if you can be strong on defense and special teams, that can kind of help carry you if the offense struggles at times.
That was podcast karma, by the way. My crack about going 0 for 13, it came back to bite me with the incorrect year. See, yeah. I made my own gaffe right there in the
it
face
happens.
Of that. Yeah, no. But
we still believe in you, Paul.
I'll leave you with this, and I think you guys just hit on it a little bit. There was an NFL Network panel discussion. There were like 15 analysts up there, but it came down to the following, that here in today's NFL, whereas in recent history, every game will come down to four or five plays. It seems like every game is coming down to one or two plays. That's how tight these games are. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think if you went back through, and this would be a great off-season project, and I'm going to put the intern on, if you go through all 16 of the Cardinals games and you try and boil it down to one or two plays, I bet you could. I bet you could. A vast majority of them, there are two.
Probably,
you know,
not London.
Now, it's incredibly subjective. You know, it's incredibly subjective. Yeah. Throw out the blowouts. Thank you, Darren. Okay. You know, throw out the blowout, but I mean,
yeah, I could
those
see that.
Pivotal games, it wasn't four or five plays; it was probably one or two plays. That's it.
No, and that makes sense. But that's what the NFL tries to build is mm-hmm. is something like that, and that's why I often say that, you know, when you're talking about bad teams, that's why many blowouts are bad for one team in a season, because that talks to me about effort. Because the bad teams aren't bad; they just lose. And there's a difference, because the bad teams with the losing records, most of the time, they're close games. They're competitive. It's just they don't do enough to win at the end. And that's different than being horrific.
So covering the Larry Fitzgerald story, we'll just wrap it up with this. Is it different when you get to go out to the Phoenix Open for the entirety of an 80-degree day and you get to hang out there at the Phoenix Open and sort of mingle?
Don't forget about Larry when you're out there.
And partying, you know, I mean, you know, it's convenient.
Sitting on the berm.
Yeah. You know, whoever's on that beat really owes Larry a solid for taking that coverage out to the Phoenix Open.
A solid for the 2 minutes of I haven't made my decision yet.
Right. Well, but he's getting you out of the office and you're out to the Phoenix Open, all in the name of covering Larry Fitzgerald. And his indecisiveness. You owe him a thank you for that. Okay, that's Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com.